You ready? All right. Good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 21st, 2013. Before we get into the agenda, a couple of notes. First, we will hold off on departmental reports from Carla Webb, other reports from Lisa Markley later in the agenda, and we're going to pull an update on City Hall campus project in Nevada up to the top of our other items so that we can deal with that before we get into some of the meat of this meeting. As you all would expect, I think this is going to take us a little time to work through. With that said, one encouragement for everybody to please silence their cell phones just so it's not distracting with so many people in the room. And please join us as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, so we have an opportunity now for comments from the public on today's agenda. Here's what I'm going to ask of everybody. First of all, if you prefer to speak now, now is an opportunity. If you prefer to speak to a specific topic, so there's two major topics that we're going to deal with today. The first one is a resolution presented to us by the League of Women Voters on the Bakken oil pipeline. If you want to speak to that, I would ask that you wait and speak to that as we discuss the matter, and we'll give everybody an opportunity to speak. Second one is this e-cigarette resolution. If you want to speak to that, I'd ask that you wait. If you want to speak now, if you feel like you're going to have to leave before you get an opportunity, you're welcome to come now on either of those topics. Or if you have another topic that you'd like the board to consider on today's agenda, now's your opportunity to come to the microphone. And so I just ask anybody who wants to speak now, please move toward the microphone. All right, seeing no one moving to the microphone, we will move on to consideration of minutes from our July 14th meeting.
Move approval.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any corrections or additions? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed.
Move approval.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Personnel actions passed. Consent agenda. Board, please note that we got the addition of the utility permit 16, 11, and 12.
Move approval with noted additions.
Second.
We have a motion and a second on the consent agenda. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
It passes. So this is where we are going to move one item up and deal with it now, and it is the update from the City of Nevada on the City Hall campus updates. Mayor Lynn Lathrop, I know you're in the audience. Lynn, I'm just going to ask that we deal with this as expeditiously as possible so we can get going. Okay. Brett, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
How about if you guys both introduce yourselves for the record?
I am Brett Barker, and I'm representing the City of Nevada Community Betterment Committee.
Lynn Lathrop, Mayor of Nevada.
Outstanding. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Mayor Lynn Lathrop. I'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors and the county employee for not only giving us this opportunity to submit a funding application, but awarding us $56,000 for this very important project for the county seat. As you may know, this vital piece of real estate once was home to a thriving business. On July 27, 2012, the city acquired the property, and now our goal for this location is to attract folks back to downtown to refocus our main street. In 2012, Leadership Nevada graduate Brett Barker and the Community Betterment Committee member will update you on the proposed project.
Okay, and the project, I know you guys have gotten a lot of history for how we got to the first design, so I'll kind of take over from that point on. once we got that first conceptual design, we put that out to the community, got a lot of different feedback from different groups. Initially, we had put out the three concepts from Leadership Nevada for comment periods. We got pretty good feedback from that, and that's where that first design came from. But obviously, as soon as you have a final version of the project, you get a lot more feedback. And so the committee took that feedback, and what we tried to do was incorporate it but still keep the ultimate goal of the project. And the goal is to have a gathering space that would allow performances and things like that at festival times right off of Main Street, and also to draw people downtown who then can shop or eat downtown for different events. And so to have that kind of focal point for ice cream socials, community band, things like that. And so we feel like we were able to do that. A lot of the feedback we got said, hey, it really detracts from City Hall. We think it's too much. We heard we want more green space. We really like the green space that's there. And then talking to the community band director, we had a lot of conversations with him to make sure that he had what he thought was versatile enough for all the different types of groups that might show up there. So the raised platform at the size it was, while that might be fine for the size of the community band, maybe if he wants to bring the high school band, it might be too large. And so we had a lot of discussion about that to make sure that it was able to be versatile enough. And in the final design, the canopy will be high enough so that if we were to go a few years from now and say, hey, we really would like, you know, this is getting used a lot, we want to put more money into the band shell component, we want to raise it up, add sound systems, lighting, all that stuff, it can be done the way it's there. So we plan so that if someday we want to raise it and do more with the actual performance place, we can. So that's where the last drawing came from, and it has gotten more positive feedback than the first one. And once you get out there, it is a smaller space. Having that much going on does kind of block the City Hall view and things like that. So they were legitimate things that the community had to say about it.
Okay, we wish to remind the county that there are two areas there that this project meets the county urban renewal area project legibility requirements number 1 and 2, and that's the public land and infrastructure and Main Street and Town Center revitalization.
And the total project cost ended up being $273,000. The council approved the final design and the bids on July 13th, and the financial goal was reached. There are still some grant applications pending, and then there's still people who are donating and buying some brick. So there's still a little bit that potentially will be incoming. The city funded 50% of the cost. The county would be 21% of that cost, and then the rest of the grants and the donations are 29% of the cost. So you can see it's a pretty good partnership between all of the stakeholders there. The shelter cost, it's $99,000 for the pavilion, and that is the same as it was before from the first one into the last one, because that canopy cost was the same. And so that's ultimately, I know what was presented to the county was the cost of that canopy, and so that did not change, even though some of the accessories to the project did a little bit at the end. And then that cost does not include the electric or the concrete that goes under it. It's just the canopy itself. And so the county percentage of that shelter is approximately 45%. And there have been over 60 individual donors who have donated cash or purchased amenities in the amount of $35,000. And we're pleased that all the benches and the planters have been sold, and there's still time to donate cash for other things or brick to honor loved ones. Or there have also been people in the community who have purchased brick to honor businesses that are no longer on Main Street, kind of for the history of it. And then all the forms and more information are still posted on the city website.
So again, the benefits for doing this project is a win-win situation. We have increased property taxes, economic growth, and we'll be attracting people to live and do business in Nevada in Storey County. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present this. And any questions you may have, we'll be glad to answer.
Well, Lynn, I want to thank you and Brett for being here today and updating us on the project. For the people in the audience, by way of background, about 3 years ago, this board decided that the county needed to be more active in helping our towns help themselves. And so we instituted multiple programs, but this is one of the programs we instituted. And in fact, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not sure if Leanne Harder's in the room, I think I think we have now been involved with every city in the county except for Story City and Ames in doing a project like this. Is that accurate? As I said, or close to accurate, maybe, is better? So you don't have to... And so this has not been a cherry pick kind of thing. We're really in and trying to help our local municipalities. And it's a great project that you guys are doing. This is the county seat. This is where we come to work every day, and we appreciate the work you guys are doing. We're glad that we can play a small role in this project. So thank you very much. Wayne, Paul, anything?
We're going to start work on it.
That, I believe, is slated for September.
Okay.
Yes.
No, I just haven't gotten my brick picked out yet. I'm still having trouble struggling with the size.
Yeah. Well, we've got plenty.
Oh, all right.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day. All right, so that takes us back to the top of additional items. And let's talk just a minute about the process. So our first item under additional items is consideration of Resolution 1606. It's a resolution that has been brought to us by the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, opposed to the permitting and construction of the proposed pipeline by Dakota Access. Here's the way we're going to go through this. I'm going to invite the League of Women Voters up to the microphone to introduce this resolution to the board, since it is in fact coming from them. And then we're going to open a public comment period where anybody who wants to speak, I'm going to have to come up one at a time. I didn't get any cards filled out from people wishing to speak. I assume there's many of you that wish to speak.
You have?
Okay. So I'm going to go through those cards and call you up. Then we're going to invite anybody who didn't fill out one of those cards to come up. We're going to give you 2 minutes apiece as we go through this the first time. That does not count League of Women Voters coming and introducing it to us. After that, we'll go 2 minutes apiece. And then once everybody has an opportunity to speak, we're going to go back through, and if anybody has anything they want to add, they'll be able to come up again. It is the tradition of not only this board, but previous boards here in Story County, that agree or disagree, we conduct really, really open meetings. We invite everybody to share their point of view. We do ask that it remain polite and civil at all times. We think we can all disagree from time to time without being disagreeable, and we're going to ask that everybody hold themselves to that. And we'll move through this. Hopefully none of us will starve to death between now and lunch as we get done with this. So with that, we'll get started. First, I'd like to call Davina Harden, who's the president of League of Women Voters, and Linda Merkin, who's the past president of League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, up to the microphones to introduce this resolution that you guys have put on our agenda. And welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Davina Harden, and I'm the president of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. Thank you for granting us, the League of Women Voters, the opportunity to address you today on this important issue. I will now defer to past President Linda Morgan.
Thank you. I would also like to thank you for allowing us to be here today. The League, as you know, has a long history of studying issues regarding use of our natural resources and of advocating for environmental protection. Recently, the National League opposed the construction of the proposed Keystone XL pipeline. Here in Iowa, we have worked for additional funding and regulations to improve the quality of our water. As a member of the Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition, the League of Women Voters ask that you oppose the construction of this proposed pipeline. It would cross Story County, as you know, and we would also ask that you urge the Iowa Utilities Board to deny the request by Dakota Access for a permit to construct it. If the permit is granted, Dakota Access will be allowed to use eminent domain to obtain land across the entire state, including Story County, to construct the pipeline. The history of pipeline breaks and spills across the U.S. gives us reason to believe that operation of this pipeline could imperil both our valuable agricultural land and our precious water supplies. Story County may have additional risk because of the plan to build the sole pumping station for the proposed Iowa pipeline northeast of Huxley. Of note is a pipeline spill near Highland, Illinois, a week ago last Friday that was caused by a pipe breaking at a pumping station. The $250,000 statewide bond required by Iowa law would be a drop in the bucket compared to what would be needed to deal with the hazards of a pipeline break and spill of Bakken crude oil. The cost to Story County alone could be staggering. and if the aquifer were to be polluted, the damage would be with us for centuries. Although this resolution, if adopted, would not have the force of law or regulation, it would send a message to the Iowa Utilities Board that our local government shares its citizens' concerns. The League recognizes and appreciates the efforts Joy County has made over the years to address environmental and water quality issues. We are asking you as our representatives to adopt the proposed resolution and to file an objection with the Iowa Utilities Board. Thank you for your time and for considering our request.
Thank you both for being here today. Thank you for your involvement in all politics, local politics. I said so Linda and DeVita both came and met with me, has it been 10 days ago? Is that a week ago, 10 days ago, just to talk a little about their desire to put this on the agenda and talk through the process that we would go through. And I shared with them that then, and I'll share with all of you now. I think there have been, are, and will continue to be times that probably the League and I don't see eye to eye on some of the issues. No question about that. But I have always appreciated the method that the League goes through, how engaged and active you guys are. I think it's exactly what groups are supposed to do when it comes to government and specifically local government. And so really, really appreciate the time and energy that you guys have put in and the way you handle yourselves. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
First on our speaker list is Herb Kloss. Herb, did you get here early or did it just work out that you were at the top of the list?
I don't know.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for hearing me. I'm Herb Kloss from Ames. I have been a commissioner on the Story County Soil and Water District for 12 years prior to my resignation, and now I serve as an assistant commissioner. I think that we hear a lot about water quality and the potential for an oil spill from this pipeline, which is true. There's never been a pipeline built that hasn't had a break. Littlest attention has been given to the effects on the soil itself. And the construction of a pipeline over a construction easement of 150 feet wide will affect, in Story County, 14.6 miles, which comes to 260 acres of Story County land. Most of it is ag. We drove the route yesterday. It affects the immediate effects on the soil fertility, soil compaction, the separation of the soil horizons, which are very important, the changes in the soil biology, and right now we're in the process of trying to improve soil health, which means that the microorganisms and the creatures that live in soil that make it fertile will be affected. And natural drainage as well as constructed drainage in our drainage districts will be affected directly, as well as changes in soil temperature. And that will affect soil productivity for a long time. The route of that pipeline will be visible for decades. So I urge you to consider this resolution by the League of Women Voters. I think it's appropriate, and we need to be concerned about our natural resources, including our soils.
Herb, thank you very much. Next, I have Angie Carter. Lucy, do I need to be having them state their address when they sit down?
No, okay. Where you live is appreciated.
Good. Hi, Angie. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having us here today. I am here today with the League of Women Voters in support of this resolution. And I am very concerned about the risk that this abuse of eminent domain poses to landowners in our county and the precedents that it would set for out-of-state corporations to use eminent domain for future projects that are not for public utility or public use. Decades ago, the tobacco industry told us that their products were safe. Today, oil companies are telling us that their oil pipelines are safe. But we know that they're not. We know that they hire good workers. My family has long been members of unions. and I'm not concerned about the union members' work. I'm concerned about who will own this pipeline in 10 to 15 years from now. I'm concerned about how across the country we have tragic examples of oil pipelines that have been failed to be maintained, that are not kept up to code. And even when they are kept up to code, we have tragic breaks in them, like under the Yellowstone River last winter that contaminated the drinking water supply of the nearby town with benzene, which is a cancer-causing agent. So I'm very concerned about the public health risk to those in our county with this pipeline. I know that we're at increased risk here in Storey County with the proposed pumping station here. Iowa code only requires liability up to $250,000 for damages, and that's grossly inadequate. We know also that even before there is any sort of potential leak or break in this pipeline, Dr. Tom Fenton from Iowa State, retired professor emeritus in soil science, has shared how just the installation of this pipeline will lead to soil compaction and impact soil health in our county. So it's a concern just with the installation of this pipeline. I'm also very concerned about how this jeopardizes the livelihood of those in our county who make their living through agriculture, knowing that a neighbor's farm, even if you don't have a pipeline on your farm, your neighbor's farm and the tile line and the way that the hydrology works in the soils, this oil would not be stopped by a fence line or a road, right? So it's definitely of extreme concern to the county. It's of extreme concern to me. Five generations of my county, of my family, have lived in Storey County. I'm a seventh generation Iowan, and so this is on my conscience. I think it should be on your conscience too, as stewards of Storey County's resources for future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Next, I have Monica Reynolds. That's where you sit, right? Thanks, Monica. Arden Reiner, I have next. Arden, I don't think this one involves Tiff. Arden is a regular speaker to the Board of Supervisors. We tend to debate the use of TIF dollars regularly. I don't think today is one of those.
No. Arden Reiner, Missouri and Iowa. Years ago, utility wanted an easement through my farm. I asked my attorney. He said, don't stand in the way of progress. I assume that this is going to pay property tax or taxes some other way, like all the utilities do. So we need to have economic development. If you want to pay for these projects, if you want to pay for the pensions, we have to have economic development. The economist said we had three people living on an island and they were growing vegetables, and then all of a sudden they decided they was going to tax themselves and give themselves pensions. No, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. If you want to pay the bills, you have to have economic activity.
Thank you, Art. Next, I have Mark Cooper. Hi, Mark, you were here early.
I was. 9 o'clock. Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Mark Cooper, and I have the honor and the privilege of being the president of the South Central Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO. South Central is a labor organization that represents and advocates for over 30,000 workers in 15 counties, including Storey County. First of all, I'd like to say that building the building trades affiliates, the South Central Iowa Federation of Labor, does support the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Secondly, I would like to stress that we are not asking the Storey County Board of Supervisors to support our position in regard to this project. Our members are pleased that the company that's building this pipeline had the foresight to enter into an agreement that will ensure highlighting of the state and federal environmental and safety standards that have to be met, and the fact that the company has to demonstrate that they have the financial resources available to mitigate any potential negative effects. Most importantly, that it will be built by skilled workers who have gone through union apprenticeship training approved by the United States Department of Labor, and the majority of these workers will be Iowa workers. Before you are presented with this resolution from the pipeline opponents, they approached the governor and demanded that he issue an executive order to block the pipeline. The governor's response was that there was a process in place to give all interested parties a fair hearing, and then denied the request for an executive order. Then they lobbied the Democratic-controlled Iowa Senate and the Republican-controlled Iowa House, and we're told that there was an approved process in place, which is monitored and implemented by the Iowa Utilities Board. The Iowa Utilities Board has the staff, resources, and expertise to make an informed decision based on a fair and open process where all interested parties will have an opportunity to be heard. It is our hope that they rule in our favor, but if they don't, we will know that they base their decision on the safety and the overall best interests of the people of Iowa. Then, of course, as most of us are familiar, there is always the availability of an appeals process. In closing, I would like to point out that the oil that's being produced in North Dakota is going to be shipped through Iowa, regardless of what action is taken by the Story County Board of Supervisors or the Iowa Utility Board. Studies show that the safest in regard to loss of human life and the most efficient means of shipping that product is through a pipeline. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, I apologize for butchering this last name. I'm getting ready to Ed Weierstein.
We did a pretty good job.
Did I?
Pretty good.
Good job in pronouncing it.
Awesome. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Ed Weierstein. I represent myself and MAINE, which is an acronym for Midwest Alliance for Infrastructure Now. And it's composed of businesses, agricultural industry, citizens mainly interested in infrastructure projects that can help the United States. And I'm doing this because I believe in the project. I don't have to be doing this, but I was asked to do this, and I think it's a project that I think is well worth it. And some of the information that's been brought forward, you know, I can't disagree with it. The biggest thing that I noticed in the meetings that were held in the counties that the company had to hold before it went to the IUB board, the biggest thing was the safety of the construction, the safety of the pipeline, and the drainage and what it did to the soil structure. Well, I guess as far as the safety goes, the company is going to spend approximately $4 billion on this project. I don't think a company is going to spend this kind of money and then do it in an irresponsible way. I think they want to do it so they don't have to spend any money in the future on any breaks or anything like that. As far as guaranteeing there will be no any kind of an accident or anything like that, I don't think anybody can guarantee anything like that. If we wanted everything to be 100% safe before we did it, we wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. As far as any kind of what it will do to the soil structure, yes, there is going to be some damage to the soil structure. And that's why there's an easement process to take care of anything that happens to the – if whatever it's going to happen, take care of it in the easement process. Whatever they're going to pay the landowner, take care of it in that way. But what they're doing, they do have – obviously, they've been doing this for a while. They know how to put the soil back as best they can. Doesn't mean it's going to be absolutely perfect, but compared to 30 years ago when a pipeline went through, yeah, you can probably see where that pipeline is going to be. But the way they have the construction now, maybe in 30 years we won't see this one, just mainly because they know how to do it a much better way, a much better, safer way. I look at the big picture. This is a project that is going to be good for Iowa. It's going to be good for this country. It's going to achieve our national security and energy. One of the processes, just one of the things that helps us become safer and don't have to worry about some company or country across the ocean doesn't like us. And this, I think, is going to be a good process for and a good project for Iowa and the United States.
Thank you. Next, I have, I believe it's Eric Schmidt.
Hello.
Hi there. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. My name is Eric Schmidt. I'm with the Laborers International Union of North America, local number 353. First, I want to thank the board for allowing us to come and present in front of you. And we'd like to take this time to address the concerns of the League of Women Voters and the board as well. Our research shows that buried pipelines are statistically the safest and most economically efficient means of transporting oil. This is according to the U.S. Department of Transportation. And construction of the project will not only put thousands of Iowans to work, but will advance the goal of national energy independence. And we want to stress the goal of national energy independence, because by bringing this oil into market, it will have a direct impact on American foreign policy. The Midwest has yet to develop adequate infrastructure to cope with the recent energy boom occurring in our region. As a result, oil trains have to carry nearly 70% of Bakken oil out of the region, resulting in more than 30 oil trains crossing through Iowa every week. This pipeline would unburden our rail system. This pipeline would transport oil the safest way possible while leaving the smallest carbon footprint. The construction would not create temporary jobs, but add and maintain permanent careers in the construction industry. The workers would construct this pipeline to meet or exceed state and federal safety requirements. Overall, this project is going to provide good jobs for working people. We are currently working with the current process established by law to show our support. If we felt the right way to go about expressing our support was to corner each Board of County Supervisors to pass a resolution, we would have taken that route. Since we are following the current process, we encourage everyone to do the same as other interested parties and submit a letter of support or in objection to the Iowa Utilities Board electronic filing system. In fact, we've drafted some resolutions as well. I don't know if this is the appropriate place to put it, but since we found out last week that this is another process that people take, we have drafted a resolution as well, and we'd be willing to give that to you guys after the meeting. So thanks again for your time, and that's all I have.
Thank you for being here today. Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Brandy Lamoback. Hi, Brandy. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Brandy Lamoback, and I'm a member of the Labor's Local 353. And I'm here today to express my support and encourage this board to not approve a resolution against the Dakota Access Pipeline. I am a resident of Astoria County, and the reason I hope the Iowa Utilities Board considers approving this project is due to the amount of construction jobs throughout the state of Iowa. I have read that if the pipeline project is approved, more than 3,000 construction jobs would come to fruition. This would provide a massive amount of economic dollars to the state of Iowa, as well as benefit many small businesses along the route, increasing the safety of our future and nation, not just in Iowa, but all over the U.S., requires a modern energy infrastructure. Pipelines are proven to be the safest, most environmentally sound way of transporting a resource we all depend on, while at the same time leaving the smallest carbon footprint. Without updating the old and building the new, American infrastructure would become as bad as the train derailments we're experiencing throughout the nation each week. Your decision impacts construction members, small businesses, and American foreign policy. I hope you make the right one. With that all being said, this type of resolution sets a bad precedent. This is a process, and there's a process in place where both sides can register their position on the IUB website. The Iowa Utility Board has the resources to vent all the arguments and make an informed decision. I'm asking the board to consider voting down the resolution and allowing the current regulatory system to go through its process.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here. Next, I have Larry Corson. And again, I apologize for butchering these names. I'm sure I'm doing. Thank you for being here.
My name is Larry Kearson, 3908 Stonebrook Circle in Muscatine. Opposing the Bakken pipeline is a bit like planting a tree. And in my considerable years, I've planted thousands of trees. I still plant trees when I get an opportunity to do so. The trees I'm planting today are not for me. They're for my children, my grandchildren, for your children, your grandchildren. The Bakken pipeline will carry 570,000 barrels a day of oil every day, year after year. I can't even conceive 570,000 barrels of oil, but it's a big puddle. That oil will go all over the world. It will eventually be burned. That's going to contribute gigatons, another concept I can't really imagine, gigatons of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. That carbon dioxide will come full circle. It will end up back in Story County as well as everywhere else in the world, and it will be there for at least a century. The result of that will be climate change. There will be scenarios here in Story County that we have not even conceived of as yet and cannot imagine, but the changes will occur. Opposing this pipeline isn't going to solve climate change, but we should not be constructing infrastructure today that is going to facilitate the increased use of fossil fuels over the next 50 years. So today you have a chance to plant a tree, maybe even a small forest. If you do plant that tree, I will thank you today. My children, my grandchildren, your grandchildren will thank you forever. Thank you.
Larry, thank you very much. Next, I have Davida Harden. Welcome back.
Thank you. As cited earlier, following Larry, I too have concerns about the future for my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren. I think that the impact that the oil, if spill, when spill, not if, but when spill, will damage, will create a damage that we cannot even foresee. I do hope that you will consider this resolution based on that, as well as many other factors that will be cited, have been cited here today. But my concern for the future is for my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren. Thank you.
Thank you, Mia. Next is Linda Merkin.
Thank you. I'm a landowner in Story County. I've lived in Story County all of my life on pretty much the same land. It is not in the route of the Bakken pipeline. That doesn't mean it's not a concern to me. I've been doing a lot of research. I found some very interesting statistics. And would like to follow up more on them, but here's what I found today. In the last 20 years, there's been an average of 250 incidents per year of pipeline breaks. In Illinois, according to the Federal Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, in one state last year, Illinois, $17 million in property damage from pipeline incidents. I find it very interesting that we're running new pipeline all the way throughout Iowa to get to existing pipeline in Pocota, Illinois. And that's around the area of the Highland Break that I mentioned earlier. I'm appalled to find out that at Bakken they're burning off natural gas, wasting a natural resource, because it would cost a little bit more money and be a little more inconvenient to actually process that, capture and process that natural gas. CO2 is going into the atmosphere because they're burning off natural gas there. The politics of it are just, and how the companies are there ignoring environmental issues is very disturbing to me. If they're doing those kind of things, if there are so many pipeline breaks, if there are so many things that are happening, I find it hard to believe all of the safety arguments that I'm hearing. That the company, of course, is going to be safe and not do a pipeline that might break because they have money in it. Well, they've got money in them now, and the pipelines are breaking. I can't buy that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Lynn. I've got James Piazza Jr.
Hello, James Piazza Jr. from Des Moines, Iowa, but I represent the International Union of Operating Engineers 234, which have approximately 60 members that live in the Story County area. They represent close to 2,500 workers here in the state of Iowa. many of their employees in the Story County area are employed with the Powerhouse, City Employees of Ames, and also Cyride Bus Service. We do have pipeline workers in the operating engineers who are specifically trained to work on pipeline projects. They engage in apprentice programming that have been approved, as Brother Mark Cooper has stated, by the DOL, BAT trained apprentice programs specializing in pipeline work. That training is to ensure that pipelines are constructed structurally correct, efficient, completed in a safe way. As heavy equipment operators, soil compaction is a critical function of their work, one of the most critical functions. And when you're building highways, when you're putting pipe, when you're doing building foundation work, compaction is critical. In this specific area, we realize that this land that will be disturbed is going to have to be brought back so that crops can be planted on that land again. It's my understanding that the pipeline company is also engaging with farmers and landowners to restore that land to full productivity by also bringing in other companies that are such as Key Ag and Dura-Root, which are advocates for farmers and also will specialize in making sure that that loam is the compaction is proper and that that land can be brought back to production in short order. Dakota Access Pipeline is an opportunity for our members who enjoy careers in construction to engage in profitable employment building this pipeline. These workers will take pride in knowing their work will benefit the goal of United States energy independence and will have pride in constructing a state-of-the-art product. We heard testimony about the oil trains that are currently moving through the state of Iowa. It is a safer method to move this energy through a state-of-the-art pipeline. We have thousands of miles of pipeline running across this country, hundreds of miles across this state as it is. And, you know, while we do hear testimony regarding pipeline leaks, much of that infrastructure is old, and if it were to be rebuilt, the operating engineers would surely like to upgrade those systems also. But this pipeline would be brand new, and we think that is the safest, most efficient way to transport that oil. We understand that concerned citizens have brought forward this resolution, and we respect the fact that this body, Story County Supervisors, is giving those concerns a hearing today. And we appreciate the opportunity to also speak before you. But with that said, we would also like to remind the board that there is a regulatory process in place. Other speakers have talked to that through the Commerce Department of the State of Iowa, Iowa Utilities Board. And we think that that statutory framework that the Iowa legislature has worked on to develop the Iowa Utilities Board process and the eminent domain process is the proper forum and with the ability to have a full fact-finding to make policy decisions. And so, with that said, we're asking this body to defer on a decision on this resolution and suggest that it's more properly something that should be heard before the Iowa Utilities Board. By their own admission, the League of Women Voters have testified that this proposed resolution would not have the force of law, but rather a message. And as such, we believe this resolution would set a precedent regarding economic development and the Story County Board of Supervisors that may ring negatively to other industries which may come to Story County or which currently operate in Story County, such as wind energy. I would just indicate that the operating engineers are very involved in erecting wind towers and work with our current other utilities that engage in eminent domain process. And so I would suggest that there should be a little bit of caution there in terms of what political messages we are sending to other industries that have to engage in Iowa Utility Board determinations for eminent domain procedures. And with that said, we respectfully request that this body oppose the proposed resolution, and thank you again for the opportunity to speak.
James, thank you very much. That brings us to the end of people that filled out the cards. I'm sure it does not bring us to the end of people wishing to address this. So first call is for anybody who has not yet spoken to the board that, hearing what you've heard, now wishes to speak to the board in this matter. Anybody wishing to do so? All right, so I'll turn and I'll... Yes, sir. Mr. Klaus, thank you for being here today. Please start by introducing yourself and address as well, since we don't have a card.
My name is John Klaus. I live at 2167 Ashmore Drive in Ames. And unlike Herb and Larry Kirchner, I'm not a scientist. What I know about transporting crude oil is what I see on television. And what I have seen on television, as have all of us, are shorebirds along the sea coated in oil. We've seen oil slicks out on the ocean. Now, when this pipeline leaks, and it statistically will leak, we will then what? See oil slicks on the Missouri? See an oil slick floating down the Mississippi? We've seen oil-covered birds on the ocean. Will we see spring calves staggering down to the creek to get a drink and stepping through crude oil and backing away with an unsatisfied thirst? Will we see dead fish? If you look at Iowa, you see that it's just a web of waterways, north to south, northwest to northeast. And when that crude leaks, it will affect every one of those waterways. And the spring calves will not be able to find a place to drink. The shoots of green corn will not come up. And the green hills of Iowa will never, ever be the same again. And that's what we're facing. And that's a very important decision. And that's why this pipeline is objectionable. It's objectionable. And we'd like to see the supervisors make that objection known to the board, the Iowa Utility Board. And that's all we're asking. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else who's not yet addressed the board? Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I didn't plan on speaking, but I'd like to say a few things.
James
Edmondson, Des Moines, Iowa.
Thanks, James.
I am a member of Local 234. I have worked on pipelines over the years. The thing that everybody is concerned about, water quality and land values, and I would like to ask the board to talk to some of the farmers in states such as Missouri and Illinois that have had pipelines cross their land. I do not know microbiology. I'm not going to attest to anything about what's in the ground there, but for the most part, the farmers are thrilled after the pipeline goes through because it does break up the subsoil and the topsoil, and they usually get a better crop. You can actually see through the fields driving down the highway, you can see where the pipeline has been because the crops actually grow better over the pipeline. I don't know about the temperature or anything like that, but all the farmers I've ever talked to have been quite thrilled with the way the land is put back together. I can tell you that there's environmental crews on every pipeline spread that are concerned about the water quality, about the runoff. Everything is environmentally friendly as it can be. I don't think the carbon footprint or anything like that is going to get solved today, or global warming, but the economic boom that would come from having this pipeline go through, if the board would think about that, when you get 400 to 600 people coming into this town this size, living and working, spending their money, spending their dollars here, it can be quite significant. Cameron, Missouri, where I was at, is a town that really boomed when the pipeline came through there. I can tell you that much. And they were sure sorry when we left. So that's all I have.
James, thank you very much. Anybody else who has not yet addressed the board that wishes to do so? All right, anyone that has already addressed the board that has something else they'd like to add? Harden.
Arden Grander again. We all want cheap gas. Agriculture is the backbone of this state. We need diesel fuel. Paul, help me out on this. There's a cluster of four pipelines just a mile east west of town here, isn't there? Goes all the way across.
There's several pipelines that go through
Troy County. Does anybody even know that? Does anybody know any problems we've had with any pipeline? You know, I mean, it's kind of chasing a doomsday scenario, and seemed like there was something else, but I didn't write it down.
You can remember right now, or you'll forget while you're walking up. Anybody else who's already addressed the board?
Angie,
that's right. I couldn't find your name, Angie.
Again, my name is Angie Carter, and I completed my PhD in sustainable agriculture last week, actually.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I have spoken to farmers from Minnesota and Wisconsin who have had a series of oil pipelines go through their farms. In Troy County, we may have natural gas pipelines. In the state of Iowa right now, we do not yet have an oil pipeline. An oil pipeline is a different sort of project. And the farmers in Minnesota and Wisconsin I spoke with said that we have a really great opportunity right now in Iowa, because once you get a pipeline through your state, it sets a precedent to make it easier for many others to follow. So right now, by taking action and putting on record that we are looking out for the future of our county's resources, of our state's resources, of agricultural health, of soil health, then we are sending a message that we do support industry, but not industry that jeopardizes the livelihoods of our county citizens, which is a concern for our Board of Supervisors. I would also like to remind the board that while we talk about pipelines, I don't know where this experience comes from that they are safe and improve soil quality, that we do have Tom Penton at Iowa State University, soil scientist, who has put together an extensive document that I believe maybe Linda has already shared with you, that I would be glad to send with you, that's on our website, nobakken.com, for the Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition, that clearly demonstrates how this jeopardizes soil health by moving soil profiles, by having negative impacts to the microbial activity in the soil. And then when you start thinking about the depths of pipelines and the depths of tile lines in our county, it's really hard to say. We don't have a map of all the tile line in our county, and this puts our county at risk. I mean, we have a lawsuit right now, Des Moines Water Works, against the drainage districts of three counties northwest of Des Moines. I would hate to see for our county to have a lawsuit against it because drainage districts have been found to be polluting water supplies when an oil pipeline leaks or breaks. And so I think that this puts a lot of risk on our county, and I would very much hope that you will support this resolution to show that you acknowledge that risk and that you're looking out for the benefit and livelihood of our county citizens today and tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Anyone else? Yeah. John.
One thing. Thank you for hearing
us. Absolutely.
I just want to mention that moving crude oil is really the issue. Moving crude oil long distances. Gasoline is more volatile. When you break a gasoline line, it'll flare and it evaporates. When you break a natural gas line, you get an odor, you plug it, it evaporates. Crude is sticky, messy stuff, and transporting it is risky. So I believe the solution probably is local fuel. In Dickinson, North Dakota, in May, a new refinery went into operation. It's online now and it's refining diesel fuel. There's another one planned for Trenton, North Dakota. I think that's the answer. Refine that fuel close to the well instead of hauling it across the heart of America. And I'm not an expert on the oil economics, but I believe this. I read there's quite a bit of oil available right now. We're kind of have a glut of oil. And if the sanctions against Iran are lifted, there's probably going to be even more oil out there. So So I think that there are solutions to meeting our energy needs through oil, renewables, without having to build a scar across the heart of America to transport something that's nasty, which is Bakken crude.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to address the board? You remember Darden?
Yes.
All right. Keep repeating it to yourself as you walk up so you'll have it when you sit down.
I think she mentioned that there's no oil pipelines in Iowa. That's wrong. This is an oil pipeline. My supplier goes to Des Moines, loads out of the pipeline every day. So the fact there's no oil pipelines in Iowa is wrong. Do you agree with the Story County does not have the resources for the first responders and needed to protect the people and property in this resolution?
I believe that $250,000 is woefully inadequate. I happen to be chair of the Emergency Management Commission, and these are the scenarios that we look at. But I'm going to tell you, right now, the way things exist, much higher on my list in terms of emergency management concerns is a train derailment in probably downtown Ames on one of these 30 trains that come through every day hauling oil. Yeah.
But I hope we're confident that we have the resources and the first responders that protect the people of our county. And I just disagree with the resolution that says that.
Thank you. Anyone else? You guys have done a great job. Thank you very much. It's been a great conversation. I've heard what I've put into six different categories of things we've been talking about. No real order. Concerns with eminent domain and the use of eminent domain in this. The $250,000 bond that's required by the state of Iowa, and how far that $250,000 would go in the event of a spill. Environmental concerns, which includes soil quality, burning of fossil fuels worldwide. Safety in shipping. What is the safest, most practical way to ship this oil? Economic development issues, and the fact that there is, in fact, a process in place here in the state of Iowa of which the Board of Supervisors is largely left out, other than trying to work within the process for the good of Story County. That's the six that I've heard, and I appreciate all the conversation. I'm so glad that we had an opportunity to hear both sides of the issue today. Again, I'm appreciative of the League for putting this together, and I believe that this is, whether it's the correct forum for any action to be taken or not, we'll get to here in just a minute, I believe it's absolutely appropriate that local government talks about what its citizens want to talk about. And clearly the League felt like this was something worth talking about. Clearly all of you felt like, since we were talking about it, it was worth being heard on. I think that's exactly what's supposed to happen in these kind of situations. One last chance. Is there anybody wishing to address the board before we move on to the business at hand? Yes, sir. Please start by introducing yourself and giving your address.
My name is David Hoffman. I live in Ames, 3820, Quebec.
Hi, David.
Hi. I'd like to raise the concern of eminent domain, which you mentioned. To take land, the use of land from one private entity and give it to another private entity for their use, I think should meet the highest possible standard of public good. And I just don't think this project meets that. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Last call. All right. Seeing no one move, I'll turn to the board for comments and or a motion.
First of all, let me just make a few comments prior to consideration of the motion, because I think the idea of the motion, Mr. Chair, would be for us to be in a position to decide what action, if any, we're going to take. First of all, let me just say that, again, I want to echo Chairman Sanders' comments. All of you who spoke very eloquently and passionate about, you know, what you think this pipeline would do for the state of Iowa, for the future of oil independence in this country, and so forth. And I think each and every one of you are firmly thorough in your feelings and your belief about whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, and that's not going to change regardless of what happens. I think the process that we've gone through today is reminiscent of what I've experienced personally in the past 3 years. Some of you in the audience are aware, some are not, but I serve on the National Association of Counties Environmental Energy and Land Use Steering Committee. I just got back from Charlotte, North Carolina, attending our national conference. As you know, the last 3 years or so, the Keystone Pipeline, the XL, has been on the agenda, going through the halls of Congress, and so forth. And I can tell you that the same discussions that I've heard here today has been echoed on both sides of the aisle. Very articulately spoken, very passionate on all sides. As you may be aware of now, and some of you probably are not aware, but there is a move in Congress today is to ask for the president to consider approving that pipeline. I would like to tell you that after the same kind of debate and the same discussions that I've heard here today, our Environmental Energy and Land Use Steering Committee voted to ask the president to move forward with the approval of that pipeline for some of the same reasons that you've heard here. And no matter, and the people in our group who had strong environmental views, just like many of you, obviously were disappointed in the outcome, but the prevailing majority of the committee felt that there was enough benefit to move forward with this project. Now, one of the things that I also did while I was there, and since I got back, and since Linda and Delita came to us last week, a little bit, or about 10 days ago, was to also go out online and look at other research and background information. I'm sure that several of the members of this audience who have some environmental concerns have perhaps looked at some of these documents as well. But I found very interesting, while in Charlotte, I asked a question to some of the pipeline people, particularly that's dealing with some of these issues in the state of Louisiana and other areas, and they gave me a website to look at. It's called energytomorrow.org. And I actually went and read a lot of the information and the documentation that are out there. I would ask people, regardless to what side of the aisle you're on, is to read both sides of the argument. Don't just read what your own viewpoint might be. In order to make an effective decision as a policymaker, it's important for me to not just take one side of an issue, but to look at the holistic approach that is there. I've heard today great things about the changes in the industry today and the infrastructure and how some of the things have been improved. There is no doubt in my mind that if it's man-made, there is a possibility that there could be some breakage at some point. Whether that will in fact impact Iowa or not, I don't really know. But I do know that the process that we have taken here, and I want to thank my two colleagues again for supporting the leads of bringing this to our attention, that this is what government is really all about, is to allow a civil dialogue on issues of concern on both sides of any particular issue. And this has some extremely futuristic issues of concern which are legitimate, but we don't know, you know, whether or not some of those things may happen. I would like to say I also serve on the Story County Conservation Board. I'm an ex-officio voting member now. About 3 years I was a voting member on the board. This has come to the Conservation Board because it does impact the Heart of Iowa Trail, and we do have a few concerns regarding the depth of the pipeline, if it would go through that particular, it will be nearby there. And however, I do not believe, and my personal take on it, is whether or not there is sufficient evidence out there that tells me that I should take a strong stand to say that I totally am opposed to the construction of it.
We do have some concerns regarding how it might impact the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. Now, I just want to throw those few things out just from that standpoint, and then, Mr. Chair, I'll allow my colleague, Paul Duke, to weigh in. And then if it, either he or I, I'm prepared to at least put a motion on the floor for consideration at that point.
All right. Paul, anything?
Sure. I appreciate everybody's passion on this. Maybe we've had 14 people speak today, and I think it's 7 in favor and 7 opposed to the resolution. You should be concerned about it. Anybody that wouldn't be concerned about a pipeline that's going to move that much crude oil every day, I think, would probably have their head in the sand. With that being said, I don't think that this body or resolution is the appropriate venue to address that. The Iowa Utilities Board is taking comments opposed or in favor of the pipeline. You can file that comment electronically. Mr. Schmidt got up here and spoke, and his organization has a resolution that they would be happy to present to this board also. My concern is I don't know that the resolution process is the appropriate process to address this issue. My concerns with this, as a couple of my colleagues have said, the issue of the eminent domain and the $250,000 surety that the pipeline is asked to post, I think that $250,000 is woefully inadequate. That wouldn't go very far at all in the event of a spill here in Missouri County. But with that, I appreciate Linda and Davina bringing this resolution forward and the League of Women Voters. But as this resolution is presented to the board, I don't believe I'm going to be able to support it.
Thank you, Paul. Wayne, any further comments?
No, I'm okay. Up for discussion on this unless you want
then,
to. Make
then we will move on. So a resolution has been presented to the Board of Supervisors by the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. Is there a motion to adopt said, it's Resolution 1606. Is there a motion to adopt Resolution 1606? Hearing no motion, it dies for lack of a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would like to propose that we postpone any action, which in my opinion, if this is second, would be to defer action on this issue. Because as we have said, maybe I can comment more after I find out that if we take this action to defer action, then it would require second, it would require debate, and it would require, it's amendable, and it would require majority vote of the board. Another action that we could take would be to amend or modify this motion that I have just proposed. Again, each of those three things would have to take place if we wanted to basically amend. So while I do have a rationale for asking that we defer, the motion to postpone is really deferring any action at this time.
Okay, so I'm going to look to Stephen to help me through this. As I understand, so no motion was made by this board to consider the adoption of this resolution. Thereby, nothing happened. So now you can make a motion to do anything you want to do. But the reality is, if we, so now we have moved on from considering this resolution. If there's ever a time in the future that somebody wants to bring this resolution back, we have the power to do that. So in essence, we have just deferred. Now, if you're suggesting that you want to make a motion to somehow formally defer action to a set date, I guess I'm not following exactly.
No, it's not a question of tabling, because the table is
yeah, I'm not saying
back.
That.
But under Robert's Rules of Order,
yep.
You can actually postpone and delay deferred action. And one of the reasons, and I guess in order for that to happen, we've got to have a second for me to go ahead and continue to give them rationale.
Okay, so let me just be clear on what's happening. You have made a motion to defer
action.
All right, we have a motion on the table to defer action on this resolution. Is there a second? Motion dies for lack of a second.
Okay.
Further.
Well, At this point, there is no further discussion. My rationale is a moot point.
Okay.
But I believe there was, as Paul said, there were some extenuating circumstances that means that it would be worthwhile. I'd like to see the resolution presented by the other body who came here. And this is the reason for postponing it, is that at a later time, if we so decide, if it was something we wanted to talk about, I would also like to enter into the record a statement. After our meeting with Davida and Linda, I did reach out to the Iowa Association of Counties. As some of you are aware, I serve on the ISAC Board of Directors, and I asked the question whether any other counties at this time has been presented any action by either the League of Women Voters or any other entity to pass some form of resolution. To date, no county has taken any action such as what we have been asked to do here today. So I just wanted the record to show that that has not occurred from other counties. Now, has there been possible discussions? I believe there have been discussions. And there could possibly be some actions down the road. However, I believe from the information that I'm receiving is supervisors are concerned about waiting to determine what the process will be through the Iowa Utilities Board.
Okay. Anything further? Hearing none. We are going to take a 5-minute recess. Those of you who need to depart, please depart. And then we will come back and go to consideration of clean air tobacco use policy for 7-day review. Thank you, everybody. We're in recess. Come on back here. You can come back here. All right, I'm going to call us back into session. Lucia, you ready for me? All right, back into session, and we are now to consideration of clean air tobacco use policy for 7-day review, and Alyssa Wignall is bringing this to us. Hi, Alyssa. It is still morning.
All right. On the agenda, you see a policy for a clean air tobacco use. The county's original policy dated back to 1998. It was the smoke-free environment policy. So this is an update. I was directed by one of our supervisors to draft a policy. This is draft form. It's brought to you first for discussion. This is not a time where the board can vote to pass this policy. We have to put it out for feedback, our 7-day review policy. So I'm not going to read through the policy unless you have specific questions.
So I was the one that approached, I'll take the credit, that approached Alyssa and talked about this. Our old policy was simply a smoke-free policy.
Mm-hmm.
The new policy, if it's approved, includes tobacco use of any sort on any building or any grounds that's owned by or under control of Story County. Part of that affects our employees, and obviously the other part would affect the public in general. I have had some conversations with Mike Cox, our conservation director, about campground facilities that the county has, the beach facility that the county maintains. I would think, as we currently do, we would continue the practice of letting the conservation board determine their own enforcement on that policy. Mike, if you see that differently, stand up and wave your arms. So that would be my suggestion. But I think the addition of the tobacco-free, and it also includes any type of e-cigarette or vaping device, prohibits the use of that on any county, in any building or any public grounds under control of Story County.
But you're telling me, Paul, any building, public grounds in Story County except Story County Conservation would continue to set the policies and procedures for conservation, ground that we deemed under the control of conservation.
Correct, and I think we need to add that to the policy that it states, that any ground that's managed by the Conservation Board would be up to the Conservation Board to enforce the policy.
Okay. So the big changes here, as I'm hearing you and Alyssa put this forward, the big changes would be goes from smoke-free, which we already are, to tobacco-free. Correct. And include the e-cigarettes and any kind of nicotine delivery systems.
Correct.
Is that accurate? Alyssa, mm-hmm. That's how you put it together?
That is how this was drafted.
Okay. Wait, anything to add before we hear from the public?
The question for clarification's sake. And I believe it's the intent of this board, and I believe it's the intent of the Conservation Board and conservation employees, that as far as the vehicles and the conservation building, the and all of that area would be smoke-free and subject to this policy. What we're talking about is the outdoor campsite type of areas, swimming areas, things of that nature, which would not be impacted by the ordinance as laid here. And my reason for that is under the current smoke-free policy that we currently have in place now, our employees who choose to still smoke, who are of legal age, can walk off of the property here onto the street, off the sidewalk, and still smoke. And so I didn't want to put some type of restriction in place that is going to be more stringent and severe based on the smoke-free policy than what we have. So am I understanding you correctly that as far as our buildings and things of this nature, the conservation buildings, the conservation vehicles, and things of this nature, as all other subject employees, we would hope that the Conservation Board and the director would be in support of that, or are we saying are we going to leave that up to the Conservation Board to determine how their employees are going to be impacted?
Well, nothing will change if an employee that works in this building or the Justice Center wants to go out and smoke a cigarette or vape himself or whatever they want to do or put in a chew. As long as they're not on county property, they can do that. And I will leave that to the Conservation Board if they want to take a look at their policy as far as the campground area and the beach area at Hickory Grove Lake. I'm going to leave that to the Conservation Board and make that determination.
I live with that. I just wanted to kind of get an understanding because the way it's stated here, you know, it's. There's a little confusion.
Yep, and Paul indicated he would want to clean this up a little bit, right, to note that. And so that if this were to pass, that would happen during the 7-day review, and we come back and consider it. Before we get to what we're going to do with this policy, we do have a couple people who want to speak to us. The first is Monica Reynolds. Monica, thanks for being here and sitting through the first part of our conversation this morning.
First of all, good morning, and thank you for allowing us the chance to speak on behalf of Bacon. My name is Monica Reynolds. I live at 958 Red Hawk Way, Altoona. I am currently part business owner for Central Iowa Vapors. We currently have 7 stores, 6 in Iowa, 1 in Minnesota. What we would like to ask is you do your research and educate yourself on the vaping products, okay? FDA has not made a final stance on vaping. We did manage to stay out of the Clean Air Act for Iowa through the help of, we hired a lobbyist. Vaping has only 5 ingredients, and all 5 ingredients separately are FDA approved. What we bring to the community is the cleaner lifestyle. We pay our taxes. We created jobs. We currently have 36 employees. And you must be 18 or older to vape. It gives, you know, the choices to the smokers something different, an alternative to the smoking. I know as an employee for the state of Iowa for 25 years, I would have to walk a block to smoke a cigarette. And when I stopped smoking and started vaping, my work production went up immensely because I wasn't leaving my desk every hour, 2 hours to smoke. So that's another one of the benefits when you start talking about your employees not being able to vape on county property. So if they're walking a block or so to have a cigarette, look at the time that you're losing from them to go do that. Okay. I smoked a pack and a half a day for 26 years. I stopped smoking 2.5 years ago. My health, I'm so much healthier. You know, my blood pressure's good. you know, it just makes me feel a lot better. Bless you. You know, vaping does not contain 4,000 chemicals like your cigarette does. The cigarette has 897 before you light it. As vapers, we would just like to get the support. You know, we're no longer smoking. We're not, you know, when we vape and we exhale, those are not toxic chemicals like your cigarette has. As you move forward, please remember, as vapers, they also go and they support your games at Iowa State University and all your other activities that you have. So when they're out there vaping and they're not, you know, they don't have all the toxins as your cigarettes do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next we have Corey Hatfield. Hi, Corey.
Hey, Jeff. I'm Corey Hatfield from Urbandale, Iowa, and I appreciate you having us here. I am the owner of Central Iowa E-Cigs and Central Iowa Vapors, along with Monica and my wife. And I also head up the IFAST, which is Iowans for Alternatives to Smoking and Tobacco. It's a grassroots organization that we created to not only help the retailers try and get together, as well as just the new vapors that are coming into trying to figure out what vaping is, how it's compared to cigarettes, trying educating the public, educating the officials, so be it. So one of our main reasons is coming because we want to not only inform you guys that this is a very new industry. The more regulations that get placed on it without the proper studies being looked at to actually know what truthful facts and studies are done, as opposed to the fear-mongering studies that are thrown out there. A lot of the ones that are coming up really negative are they don't have the proper controls. They're not being used properly. They're turning the probably over a lot of people's heads. But you know, the voltage up way too high for the device and the resistance, and it actually is burning the product. What the devices do is they heat it up enough to vaporize it, turn it into a vapor instead of actually changing the chemical structure by burning it, and which is what, you know, tobacco does. When you burn it, it changes the chemical structure, and that's why you get all these 4,000 different, you know, plus toxins and chemicals. So the studies that are actually out there, and I'd be more than happy to you know, provide you the information if you guys would like to do more research on what the studies are that actually have the right controls and that are done at the FDA type regulations for studies, and help you guys make the best educated decision. You know, I can understand some regulation, such as maybe inside buildings, just because there's other people in here and they would feel uncomfortable to some degree or another. But out in the outside general public land, you know, we're not leaving cigarette butts all over the place. We're not spitting and chewing on the ground and leaving tobacco remains. You know, the vapor product, it just dissipates in the air, and it dissipates a lot quicker. So, you know, the reasons that I think a lot of these things were created in the original policies were because of a lot of those issues, as well as the 4,000 chemicals and the secondhand smoke, which is actually, you know, proper studies were done on that. So this industry has been self-regulating from the get-go. It's still working very hard to help the FDA, as well as I'm working hard with at the state level, trying to do what we can at the community level. I graduated from Iowa State, so this is kind of, you know, a second home to me up in this area. So I'd certainly like to see you guys definitely do more research and not over-regulate it or not overstep it to where it's going to hinder other people from transitioning off of cigarettes. So it's been a great device. We've seen thousands and thousands of people successfully transition over, and many people have even quit vaping because they're able to step down their nicotine levels down to zero and turn it over. So Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Paul, I want to make sure I'm clear. What you guys have brought forward here is starting to treat all tobacco products and the vape products in the same way that we currently treat cigarettes, which basically is our buildings and our vehicles, and we say county property, but now you're suggesting that anything conservation, which is more of the public grounds, would be in conservation's purview to do, and so we really wouldn't change
correct
what's happening in our outdoor areas.
Correct.
Right.
And it'd be, and also to be clear, this just impacts things that are leased or operated on controlled Story County. This does not impact other cities, municipalities, or anything like that.
No. Yeah, just I'm hearing just our buildings and vehicles.
Yeah,
and
it's the same policy we have now. We've simply added tobacco and
e-cigarettes. Thank you.
Okay. We haven't changed anything else in the policy. We've just added those two items.
Okay. Anybody else wishing to address the board? Yes, sir. Please come up. Introduce yourself.
Hello, thank you for having me speak. My name is Brian Vanderheiden, and I'm representing the Story County Prevention Policy Board today.
Thanks for being here, Brian.
Thanks. So the Prevention Policy Board recognizes the research, noting the harmful effects from vapors released by electronic nicotine delivery system and e-cigarettes, how it's commonly known, not only those who use them, but also in the proximity to those in the general public. The liquid used is poisonous, and if spilled, can be especially particularly harmful and poisonous to children. And we strongly urge the Board of Supervisors to limit their use in public spaces. I know that we've provided research and emerging research that you've seen. So we just strongly encourage you to take that into consideration for both the health and safety of public and Story County. So
thank you very much. Yeah. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am. Hi there.
Good morning. I'm Judy Hoffman, and I'm here to represent Healthiest Ames. Healthiest Ames is kind of the blue zones for this area. And Healthiest Ames has taken the position in support of what you are looking at today, your resolution. We have been working with the Ames City Council, talking to them about this issue. And one of the speakers earlier talked about research. I did some research 2 weeks ago when I was at Mayo Clinic. I talked to the prevention specialist there on tobacco prevention. And they said that e-cigarettes are banned on the entire Mayo campus in Rochester. Dr. John Ebert gave a Mayo Grand Round talk recently providing information on this topic to all of the doctors at the Rochester campus. They do not subscribe to or recognize e-cigarettes as a treatment option, as e-cigarettes have not been shown to be safe or to help people stop smoking. So with that information, I hope you think about that as you think about the resolution. And I'm very glad, as is all of Healthiest Ames, that you are considering this.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is James. I live in Urbandale. I would just like to say that I was a smoker for about 3 years, and I've been vaping now for about two. Personally, I feel a lot better, and you know, nowadays when I smell cigarettes, I get nauseous, I get dizzy, I just can't stand to be around them. And as a vapor, I know I wouldn't like to be subjected to having to stand next to a smoker just to go outside to get my fix. You know, the biggest thing with me is I'm respectful about vaping. I don't think my rights are better than anybody else's. And I know a large portion of, you know, current vapers feel the same way, and they are respectful about it. You know, just the other night I was, you know, out with some friends, and I chose to go outside to vape just because I have respect for people. If someone tells me to, you know, they're not comfortable with me doing that around them, you know, and then I politely stop. So I think a lot of vapors have respect in that regard. But I would encourage you guys to do more, research. As far as the liquids being poisonous, I'm not sure where that study came from. But again, there's a lot of studies that are accurate, and there's some that are. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Denise Stenton. I live in Ames.
Can I ask that everybody who has spoken and not filled out a card just to fill one out with your last name so that I have that for accuracy of the minutes?
Yeah. So, James, would you mind filling out a card and getting it to Lucy? Thank you.
Okay. I'm here representing Story County Prevention Policy Board. Want to bring up to date on a couple other policies that are pending, but also to speak to the fact that the research, though not long-term as yet, is still really very clear that the chemicals released in an aerosol vapor from electronic nicotine device delivery systems is harmful to both the user and to those in close proximity. The nicotine liquid, which is released, contains, though not in the same quantity, certainly, as cigarettes, many of the same cancer-causing chemicals that are released in your traditional cigarettes, but with a larger plume. And so those around them, it has a farther reach than your typical tobacco cigarette. So that is a concern. Nicotine itself is a poison, and if spilled or leaked onto a surface, can be hazardous, particularly to children who have a sort of bad habit of touching things and then touching their eyes and their mouths, as adults do as well. So if that area is not properly disinfected, that can be particularly hazardous to those who might come in contact with that surface, whether that be a vehicle that is owned by the county or a counter in a county facility or a picnic table out in one of the parks. So, and these are many different kinds of devices. That is not as rigorously regulated in terms of the way the cartridges are made. Many of them have glass in them, and when that breaks, that can be hazardous as well. I recently attended an Ames Park and Rec Commission meeting where they were particularly alarmed when they realized that broken glass could be at the pool, and if that nicotine leaked into the pool, there was some question as to whether the pool would in fact need to be drained. So I think they are going to quickly come to some kind of resolution on that, or indicated that they would. There are anecdotal examples, certainly, of people who have quit as a result of using vaping devices from regular cigarettes, but the research is also becoming very clear that most of those people go on to be dual users, that is very common. And that was also research from the CDC. So the current research indicates that for those dual users, that can go, that would be an individual thing, but they're receiving twice as many chemicals then. So the residue that is left is that nicotine, and the goal here is not to not let people vape, but a policy like this, I believe the goal is to not share that vaping with other people in terms of either the plume or the residue from that. As a prevention specialist, I am particularly concerned with either the prevention of it ever happening in the first place or mitigating the harm from that. And just to give you an idea, the Iowa Youth Survey has recently released the county figures for all things drugs with young people and harmful behavior, and for the first time ever they included a question on vaping, and we found that about 4% of 6th grade boys are already vaping in Story County, and 10% of 11th graders. So the cat's sort of already out of the bag on that. And certainly when young people see this kind of behavior in public places, either in county or in the county parks, our concern is that it renormalizes smoking, and we've seen a threefold increase nationwide in terms of young people smoking. So we have about 9% young people smoking traditional cigarettes. We have about 13.5% now smoking vaping devices. So from a prevention standpoint, that's a concern, just that it is out in the general public and young people see that and take that as a sign that it is harmless when, in fact, the research indicates that it is not.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else wishing to address the board? Yes, ma'am.
Hello.
Good morning.
I'm Susie Hatfield.
Hi, Susie.
And I started this whole mess. I opened the first vape shop in Iowa. I've been a nurse for over 20 years. One of my concerns with this portion of the clean air, for the shop that we do have in Story County, that's owned, it's called Vape On, if this goes into fruition, is there going to be something to protect her so that her customers, when they do come in and they want to buy a vaping product, we have what's called a testing station or a tasting station, and if they're over 18, they can come in and they can try it.
This would only apply to this building, county-owned buildings.
Just as the nice lady before me spoke, I can show her just as many and you just as many case studies. There's always pros and cons, anti and for, and there's a lot of different things. First of all, vaping is not smoking. Vaping is vaping. Smoking is smoking. You're burning something with smoking. You're heating it with vaping. It bothers me, and I'm trying really hard. I've worked at the airport. I've worked with the law enforcement. We just did a Diabetes Foundation fundraiser this last year, one of the largest they've ever had in Des Moines. I want people to be educated before they make decisions. I don't want to not come, and just because I don't live in Story County, not make a difference by showing up and having you guys make a decision on something that's such a, it's an industry in its infancy. The facts aren't there yet. I just wish we would let the FDA finish what they started in 2003, 2004, and then come up with some answers.
Susie, I'll point out, and I appreciate you being here and discussing, and Denise, I'll look to you if I misstate any of this. But at some point in the last 18 months or so, the Policy Prevention Board, whether you brought something formally to the Board of Supervisors, you definitely indicated that you were interested in the Board of Supervisors acting countywide, I think much like you're referring to include vaping products in the full ban. And that would have impacted you much like you're suggesting. This is much more targeted than that. This is the Board of Supervisors, as I see it, dealing with very specific county-owned property or vehicles. Parks, we were just talking about, that would be up to the Conservation Board, who controls all of our parks in Story County. Is that accurate, Stephen and Jessica?
That's a good reflection of the code. Yeah, that is accurate.
One thing I want to leave you guys with. We're the same way. We were smokers. It's icky. It's gross. It's not healthy. I started smoking in nursing school, believe it or not, and it was the worst thing I ever did. Just like a lot of other college people, they smoked when they drank, and they started smoking, and then you just smoked. But we're just like the people that don't like the cigarettes. Everyone is clumping. I shouldn't say everyone, but majority of the people are clumping, just vaping and smoking together. It's not. We're just like that. We don't want to see smokers either. We're here. I'm here. I quit my profession.
Yep.
And I'm passionate about this. I'm here to help people get off those icky cigarettes and try to better their lives. I've researched this. I've gone sleepless nights, and I've done this for the last 3.5 years. Because of my first little shop that opened, we now have 45 shops in Iowa. And most of them are my customers that open shops. But Doris has a shop in Ames, a very small shop, and she takes care of people in Story County that want to work with her or shop with her. And I just really want you to promise me you're going to do some research and make some decisions. I'm super afraid of a ripple effect happening from what happened in Iowa City. You guys know Iowa City.
Yeah.
Vaping is not, it's not in with smoking. It's not tobacco.
Right. Well,
Nicotine is a drug.
I think we've worked really hard not to condemn the use of tobacco or e-cigarettes. All we're saying is, if you want to do it, fine. You're just not going to do it.
I agree, and I think there's a professional way.
We're not looking to reach out and put a ban countywide on the use of these things in public. This simply covers public property that's controlled or maintained by Story County.
But if I can come here today and leave you and educate you with just one more little thing that you didn't have before. I keep hearing smoking and vaping are the same thing.
Right.
And they're clumped together when one, and like she said in prevention, she's exactly right. nicotine is a drug. If it's ingested orally, it is poisonous. Just like I'm positive it's harder to open up a bottle of e-liquid than it is an open bottle of vodka that you leave in your house when kids are home. You know, there's flavored vodka and other alcoholic drinks, just like there's flavored vaping products. We 100% supported the 18 and over, and my shops or my business has been the one wholeheartedly fighting to educate just lawmakers and people like you that we're not out to take anything away from what prevention does, what anyone does. We just want to be heard that this is not smoking. It's not the same thing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. Anybody else wishing to address us on this topic? All right, so we have a policy proposal in front of us that updates. Melissa, I think you said 1998 was when this was first put in. And it does, in fact, go beyond just smoking. And it goes to include all forms of tobacco, and it includes anything vaping. But it is very narrow in its focus in that it would be county-owned and controlled property. And so I throw that controlled in there because conservation ground is not Story County controlled property. It's Story County owned property. It's not controlled. It would be up to conservation how much, if any, of this policy they were to adopt, weighing both in their buildings and outside. Stephen, is that accurate?
That is correct. And I want to make a distinction between personal property. Vehicles, you do have a safety.
We do have a safety.
Okay. And so this would apply to all county vehicles, including conservation vehicles, if it were adopted.
Right.
We've already heard that the policy that's before us, Paul, you're already suggesting there would be one amendment during the 7-day review if it passed. I'm sure we would have the opportunity to look at some others.
Correct.
Wayne, anything to add?
No.
Okay. Melissa, anything?
Nope.
Then I would look for a motion if there is one.
I'll move approval of the policy with the addition of language to include the control by the conservation board on property managed by that board. And we'll get the language straight with our
group. Pending the 7-day review.
Pending the 7-day review.
Second.
All right, so if this is voted up, it goes to 7-day review, it doesn't take effect until we come back and consider it again next Tuesday.
Correct.
And it is very targeted in what it's supposed to do. Accurate?
Accurate.
Further discussion? Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
It passes pending 7-day review. Alyssa, we'll ask that you work with Jessica and Stephen on getting the language inserted in here that very clearly notes that conservation has control of conservation-controlled property. Thank you very much. Next item on our agenda is consideration of development agreement for Timber Roads Estate Subdivision. Ryan Newstrom. Ryan, how are you doing this morning?
Hey.
It's still morning.
I'm great. Almost.
Happy morning when you're done.
Hopefully. I'll go quickly here.
Have a good day.
As I know you guys have had a busy meeting.
I appreciate it.
This is a development agreement that we always put in place for major subdivision plats that come forward for the privately maintained, publicly dedicated road that goes in. Through the major subdivision platting process, we have a preliminary plat as well as a final plat, which you will consider two items down from this one. Part of the reason for final platting process is to either allow the subdivider, developer, to place the road, or in lieu of that, provide a development agreement and letter of credit for said road improvements contained in the development agreement to get that done. And then we consider the final plat at that time. So prior to that, the convention is to accept that development agreement prior to considering the subdivision final plat. So it's presented there for you. The auditor has a copy of the original plat that's already been signed by the property owners, and it's ready to sign. So staff would recommend accepting that development agreement. Moving approval.
Question for Ryan. Do we have a motion?
So move consideration and approval of the development agreement for the Timber Road Estate Subdivision.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Development agreement is passed. Next item is Resolution 1601, final residential parcel subdivision. Right.
And this is Timberline Estates residential parcel subdivision, not to be confused with Timber Road Estates final plat that you're considering after this one. Coincidentally, they just have very similar names, even though they're not in the same portion of the county. Again, this is a residential subdivision, as we've seen several times this year. Staff has had the opportunity to review the plat and provide a staff report to you prior to the meeting. According to our analysis, this is a subdivision of one lot into two lots. Lot two will contain the current single-family dwelling that's located in the property, and then lot one will become a vacant buildable lot upon recordation of the subdivision. Upon analysis, all the planning requirements in Chapter 87, as well as site planning standards in Chapter 88 that are in our purview for these matters, are in conformance with our requirements, so therefore staff recommends approval of this residential partial subdivision plat.
Question on Resolution 1601.
I would move approval of Resolution 1601.
Second. Motion and second. Further discussion. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1601 passes. That brings us to Resolution 1605, final subdivision plat of Timber Road Estates.
Yes. I will try to go quickly here, but as this is a major subdivision, I'll kind of be a little bit more in depth with this one. Area of land, 13.71 gross acres, located in Section 4 of Washington Township, approximately a mile and a half due east of the city of Kelly. Designated in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan as agricultural farm service, rural residential, a subcategory of rural service and agriculture conservation area, natural areas. This land was rezoned back in 2010 from A1 agricultural to agricultural residential. Here you can see the surrounding property owner map that was mailed to all surrounding property owners within a quarter mile of the proposed subdivision area, which is there highlighted in red. The request is for a subdivision of one current tax parcel into five development lots and one street lot in the AR Agricultural Residential Zoning District. Again, this is a review for a final subdivision plat. The City of Ames and the City of Kelly have both formally waived their review authority of this subdivision, even though it is within their two-mile extraterritorial subdivision review authority area. And again, in 2010, the rezoning was approved. See the subdivision plat, final plat. It looks very similar to the preliminary plat that you looked at last October and approved upon recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission. It does contain all of the necessary ingredients for planning requirements. It's Chapter 87 of our ordinance. The only issue that I will note is that the auditor's office did review the legal description located on the plat and did find one error. It has since, and I drafted a staff report based on that. It has since been fixed. We do have new copies of the plat that are signed by the surveyor, as well as the legal description located in the resolution has been updated to make note of that change. We've already approved the development agreement, so I don't need to go into that. And again, last October, we did approve the preliminary plan. So with that, I'll leave you with the following four alternatives.
And we did, you and I did get a call, worried that this had changed from October, but the reality is this has not changed from when we dealt with this 8 months ago.
Yep, the plan looks exactly the same for whatever reason. The lot numbers were transposed on lots, but that is not a concern on our performance for ordinance. It is in, you did have a condition of approval during the preliminary planning process, and it shall be limited to six development lots to supply, so we're good to go on.
No question. I would move we accept alternative one to accept the subdivision plat.
Second. We have a motion and a second on Resolution 1605. Further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1605 passes. Ryan, thank you very much. Good job.
Thanks, Ryan.
Next is, we're skipping Resolution 1607. We'll deal with that next week. And so we are to acknowledge receipt of 2015 Urban Renewal Area Project Applications. Leanne Harder. Still, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's getting ready to go off.
Just hit it,
it's
blinking green.
Yeah, the battery's dying. Okay, it's blinking green. This is to acknowledge the receipt of the urban renewal application projects for this 2015 round. The other action before you is to actually adopt the process and the schedule for taking these forward. Just a couple of quick slides, board reminder. The tax increment financing goals, objectives, and strategies that you adopted several years ago are listed up there, but four types of projects are eligible for this program that's run by Story County: transportation infrastructure enhancement, public land and trail improvement, communication utility infrastructure expansion, and then Main Street and Town Center revitalization. Again, it is not to be used to help fund projects brought forward by a private entity. And we do have an expectation there's a 25% match on the part of the applicant of the total project costs. So with that, the application deadline was earlier this month. We did receive six applications. Those are listed on the screen. They were on the agenda item posted for today's meeting, too, so I won't go into those. Of those total six projects, though, the total project costs are just a little over $2.5 million, and the requested amounts are $250,047. Any questions on the projects? And then going on to the schedule, that is up here before you. Actually starting today with the acknowledgement of the applications and approving the schedule. August, four board meetings in August will be here before you. August 4th will start the consultation meeting notices sent to the taxing authorities. And then the 11th and the 18th, we will invite the six applicants to come forward to give presentations as done in the past, and then the consultation meeting would be held August 25th. Moving on to September, responses are due from taxing entities on September 1st. The resolution establishing public hearing dates, and whether that includes amending the ordinance or just adopting the amended plan by resolution, would be on September 8th. And then it goes on to October. We start the public hearing process. With that, any questions?
And the only thing I will say about the schedule is I will definitely be out on August 18th and probably be out on August 11th, depending on how early I decide to hit the road for Annapolis on the 11th. And so I don't know what you guys' feelings are on me being here for the presentations, but I will not be here on the 18th for sure.
We don't take any action on them. They're simply presented, and
you can always
have the information that you can meet with whoever you need to meet with.
Yep.
I think that'll be okay.
All right, good. Questions for Leanne?
No, I'm sorry.
I would entertain a motion.
I will move acceptance of the urban renewal project applications and approval of the proposed application schedule.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Leanne, thank you. Good job. We're getting good at this, man. What is this, third or fourth time through?
Third
time through. All right. No agency reports. We're holding the departmental reports to next week. We're holding our financial reports and inventory report till next week. We've already done the City Hall campus project in Nevada. So liaison assignments and committee meeting updates, Paul Toot.
Pass.
Wayne Clinton.
Pass.
Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address the board? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, announcements to supervisors, Paul?
Pass.
Wayne Clinton?
Pass.
And I'll pass.
Move approval. No.
I'm not adjourning.
Is that right?
We're adjourned. We got a motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned. Thank you.
Hey, Jesse.